From the Sky News Centre at 5. From the Sky News Centre at 5, a takeover of Liverpool Football Club by New England Sports Ventures has been confirmed. It follows the withdrawal of a restraining order by Tom Hicks and George Gillette earlier today, which could have plunged the club into administration. The deal was agreed at the High Court with the club's board of directors today. Liverpool chairman Martin Broughton, chief negotiator in the takeover talks, says patience has finally been rewarded.
As every Liverpool fan knows, the most nerve-wracking way to win a match is in a penalty shootout. But in the end, as long as you get the right result, it's worth the wait. You got the right result.
Well,
John?
Good luck!
Save the Children has confirmed a British consultant working for the charity has been abducted by masked gunmen in Somalia. He and his native colleague were taken from a guest house compound in Adado, a small town close to the border with Ethiopia. NATO's senior commander of troops in Afghanistan says he's spoken to the family of British aid worker Linda Norgrove, who was killed during a rescue attempt. Initial reports suggested she was killed by her kidnappers, but later there was speculation she may have been hit by a US hand grenade. Firefighters will stage 2 8-hour strikes in London in a row over new contracts. Members of the FBU will walk out from 10 a.m. on October the 23rd and November the 1st. The future of 3 Jaguar Land Rover car plants has been secured under a new deal announced today. The car makers had planned to close either their Solihull or Castle Bromwich plant, but they're now set to create thousands of new jobs and significantly increase the range of models over the next decade. Local MP Jack Dromey is celebrating in Castle Bromwich.
The jewel of the crown of manufacturing excellence in Erdington is the Castle Bromwich plant. This is one of the 10 poorest constituencies in Britain, and local people are celebrating a famous victory.
8 would-be illegal immigrants have been caught trying to enter Britain in a truck full of birdseed. The men from Vietnam, Iran and Sudan were found by UK border agency officials in Calais. And ticket prices have been announced for the London Olympics. They'll range from £20 to £725. That's the latest. I'm Barney Burnham.
Bristol Community FM 93.2.
Hello, we're a permission to dance on BCFM 93.2. I'm James Simmons.
And I'm Josh Evans. We bring you an hour of the biggest and hottest tracks every Friday night.
We bring you the official dance top 5, weekly bios on artists, all the latest info about the scene, upcoming events, and much more.
Be sure to tune in every Friday night at 9.
Yeah, that's right, every Friday night at 9 p.m.
Hello and welcome to BCFM's Friday Drive Time. Tony Gosling. On the week, the Liberal Democrats scrapped their election pledge to abolish tuition fees. I'm joined by Lib Dem councillor for Ashley and St Paul's, Shirley Brown. Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers is here too. After the 6 o'clock news, bloggers and blogging are on the agenda at the Watershed next weekend. The internet's often seen as a source for scurrilous, inaccurate rumours. But is the mainstream press any better? Paul Breeden from the National Union of Journalists will be here to explain why blogging matters. We hear from an old friend of famous South American revolutionary Che Guevara. Hugo Blanco was in Bristol this week and our very own Martin Summers reports. And the Shortwave Report. We hear some stories you may have missed reported on English language radio from around the world. That's in the second hour. On to our review of this week's news in a minute, but here's first is our two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. This weekend, highs of 13 degrees Celsius, dry and fairly sunny, so not quite as cold as the last couple of days. Possibly windy, though, on Saturday. Next week, highs of 13 Celsius, some sunny spells, rain and some gusty winds. Next weekend, that's the 23rd and the 24th of October, highs again around 13 degrees Celsius. But next weekend, fairly wet and windy. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Well, time to introduce this week's guests now. And with me is Shirley Brown, who's the Liberal Democrat councillor for Ashley. And that's pretty much St Paul's, isn't it, Shirley?
St Paul's, St Andrews.
Okay, so
Montpellier, St Weber's.
Okay, so first of all, what's your background? What were you doing before you got into politics and became a councillor?
I was actually a manager. I was managing a community project, and I actually worked with the homeless as well on City Road for a long time. And I'm more voluntary and more worked in the voluntary sector, more in the care and management as a manager.
Okay, so what's your portfolio on the council? What committees are you on?
I'm actually on children's scrutiny.
Okay, and what do you do as part of that? Give us an idea, sort of thing that might be on the agenda.
Well, the school placements, school placements.
Because that's been quite...
Actually, everything, actually.
That's been quite a knotty issue, hasn't it? A lot of people...
And it's been very positive results.
Go on, then.
Very, very positively, because there's a lot of places that's been allocated to children that wouldn't normally have places. So you find that things are a lot better within the school, and there's a brilliant improvement in Bristol when it comes to the ratings, as in the rate...
But why was it? It was a bit of a shambles in the first place, wasn't it, that you had to clear up there? Why was it such a shambles?
Well, should we blame the Labour government for making it such a shambles in the start to start with?
But, I mean, I think a lot of people from local authorities around the country point to Bristol as quite a bad example, particularly of local authority and the education department, not really producing the goods over the last few years.
I think we can say, I think it's, let us forget the past. And let us now deal with the present. Right now, we're doing extremely well, and we're doing very well. And we should accommodate and congratulate Children's Services for what they're actually doing at the moment. I think they're doing a splendid job. And they've done everything in their powers to make sure that our parents and people within the schools are very satisfied. There's been a lot of consultation that has happened. It's been very positive results. And so I think we should talk about the positive rather than negative. We are actually moving forward.
Now, it was you that was talking about the Labour, previous Labour administration, wasn't it? But anyway, okay, so can you tell us some of the things that have been coming up for you as a councillor in your surgeries, and some of the things that are concerning you in the Ashley ward? Because it's a bit of a hot spot, isn't it?
Well, there's a lot that's been happening, ranging from recycling has been one of the main things that's been happening.
Well, people annoyed with the recycling and the fact that there's only bin collections every 2 weeks now?
I think it comes to the point of adjusting to something new. People find it sometimes to adjust to new, and it's actually adjusting to that, and you actually find that once people has actually adjusted and understand and getting an understanding of what it's all about, then we actually can actually move forward. And I feel that we have done very, very, very well in Bristol with regards to recycling and with the bin service. We're not going back to how it was. I think it's best to continue on the strand that we're actually going. And once there's a general ethos that everybody is singing from the same hymn sheet, it makes it a lot easier. So, yes, in everything, to start with, you do have a teething problems, but there has been certain teething problems that has happened. And, yeah, people has been saying, wow, what's happening? But I feel that we've done a great deal. And there's been a major move forward in the right direction.
But isn't it also a matter of language? Because there's a lot of different people speaking different languages, particularly in that part of the city. And, you know, so how are they going to necessarily... do you think that there's enough information for them to know what they're expected to do?
There has actually been literature that's actually been printed in the various languages. We have the doctors that they can actually go to, and they can telephone the council, and people will actually go into the actual communities and actually consult with them and talk to them, see where the problem is and actually resolve the problem. And there's a line that people can actually ring up on a regular basis and make up a complaint or find out what's happening, and someone will actually go and speak to them and make it better. So, yeah, for all communities, and we actually have different... And the neighbourhood partnership is also a way that... And
okay,
the neighbourhood forum is...
What is the neighbourhood partnership?
It's where everybody can actually have a voice and actually, where everyone can actually come together and have a voice. All organisations, partnerships, stakeholders, everyone, the council, the local police, everyone comes together in helping to make a decision of what they'd like to see happening and how their money being spent in their local area.
Now, I also noticed that the local housing office for St Paul's was closed down, wasn't it? And that was... put there by the Labour administration a few years ago. Mm. I mean, isn't that one of the things that the people in St Paul's and Ashley have actually lost since the Liberals took over?
No, there's a main office now in Old Market, Phoenix House.
Yes, but that's actually quite a distance to go from the area, isn't it? I mean, surely one of the things that the Liberals were always championing was we like to have our offices rather than everything in the city centre. We like to have them actually out there. And, of course, you've done the opposite in St Paul's.
I don't feel we have, because I feel that there's various people within the community, there's St. Paul's Unlimited and various organisations that people can actually tap into to get be informed of what's actually happening. There's so much help that's available, as I said, the helpline. Also the local forums, you've got the neighbourhood forums that people can actually go to and hear if they've got any concerns, if they're unhappy about anything, they can actually go and hear how they feel in the forums, and that will be brought to the neighbourhood partnership. So I believe that we're more hands-on, actually. I think it's been a major success, because we're now right in the heart of the community where we're actually listening and we're saying, well, what would you like to see happening? And then everyone tells us, and then we actually do it. So I think we're very effective, don't you think so?
St. Paul's has got quite a reputation almost around the world, but certainly around the country as a bit of a rough spot.
No, I disagree with that entirely. Disagree 100%. It's actually a vibrant area. There is so much that is happening. There are so many community groups happening. There's neighbor gardening competition. There's, you've got the learning center right there in the center that caters. They do sewing, they do cooking lessons, they do different courses. There's so many things that's happening right there in the heart of St. Paul's. People can be so engaged, can get very engaged in St. Paul's. I really don't think that, and it's no different from any other area. I really don't. I don't think it's any better than any other area. I think it's a brilliant area, actually.
Are you worried that St. Paul's, we might even see some of the riots and things like that in the future? Because we had riots in the past when there was a Conservative government back in the 1980s. Saying definitely not this time.
It's not going to happen.
I mean, we're talking about some pretty savage cuts in public services, aren't we?
Yes, there is cuts. But isn't it... The idea for the cuts is for improvement, and there's no other alternative.
But how can you improve things by cutting public services?
But I do feel that it's making it effective. Everybody knows that we've had to have the cuts. Well, everybody got to put their hands up and say, yes, cuts have to be made. So we have to accept that. Now we have to know, how do we move forward from that? How do we improve our locality? How do we make things better? Everybody has to work together. Everybody has to put their hands to the wheel and let us, you know, say, okay, yes, these cuts are here. But, you know, I think it's about people volunteering their service as well. If you're not working and you're at home, then you can get out of the house and do some voluntary work.
Okay, well, we're also
community work.
We're also joined by Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers. Martin, I'm going to ask you the same question as last week, really, and maybe you're just going to give me the same answer. But anyway, the Bank of England are lending money at virtually 0% at the moment, but the government tell us today that they're paying over £120 million a day of our money in interest. So if the investment banks can do it, why can't the government just take out a cheap Bank of England loan and pay it all off so they don't have to pay hardly any interest?
Because policy has been captured over a generation by the financial oligarchy, whoever's in power. The Bank of England is giving money to the private sector banks in order to bail them out. And, of course, they're simply lending it on at a markup in order to cover their bottom line.
But
if
the investment banks can borrow this money at tiny rates of interest, why can't the government borrow the money at the same tiny rate?
The whole system needs completely reforming, and the Labour government failed to reform it when they had the chance over 13 years. And they failed to reform it because they didn't have the will to reform it. I don't think the Condem coalition have got the will to reform it either, because they've got allies in the City of London.
It's all very well to say...
Who is going to do something about it? Good question.
It's all very well to say reform it, but if you were Chancellor, if you were George Osborne now, about to do your spending review and all that, what would you actually do to reform the banking system specifically?
What people have got to recognise is that the money supply isn't controlled by the government. It never has been. The government effectively subcontracts the creation of money to the private banks.
Well, shouldn't it cancel that contract?
Well, yes. In other words, what we're talking about is abolishing private banking. And since they're all bust anyway, that's not actually such a problem. You could just sweep them aside at this point because they're incredibly weak. But their political power is still strong. Once they're bailed out... It's like, if you owe me loads and loads of money, you've actually got me over a barrel, because I need that money back, provided I'm prepared to carry on recognising the fact that this money is being lent to you. And basically governments both in the US and here have been very timid in dealing with the financial crisis. And the reason being that the financial sector is preponderantly powerful. They've got enormous amounts of money. In the US, they basically paid for both sides in the election campaign, presidential election campaign. The big money is dominating the congressional elections in the US. And those people want to pay back for their money. And one of those paybacks is, don't mess with the system. It suits us fine.
So, Shirley, do you think we should be messing with the system? Do you think we should be telling the private banks what to do? The government should be telling the private banks what to do, because the Lib Dems now have a hand in central government, don't they?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
You think we should be telling the private banks what to do or not?
I do think we should be telling them what to do. I think there's too many bonuses, personally.
Okay. So let's have a look at some of the week's news stories. First of all, I think let's have a look at the Chilean mining disaster, even though it's been dealt with by many of the other news channels around the world. We tend to not concentrate on stories which get massive coverage elsewhere. Mm. But I think this one has been particularly specific. Have you been following it, Shirley?
Yes, I have. It was very emotional. I watched it on the internet and I was so moved by it. I had tears in my eyes. I was thinking, especially when the first man came out and the way he was, I thought, excellent, this is really good. And it's actually brought a country together, and it's actually brought a people together. And I liked what the president actually said, you know, this is really good. It's really been it's been very positive. It's been a bit very positive. And the men have been, what I found when I was reading the paper today, they've been very healthy. And they found that absolutely remarkable that they were so healthy, having been down there for so long, that they were so healthy, and from some of them being released from hospital today.
Martin?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, everybody's really pleased, but of course, the real question here is the mine owners and the government. Was their safety before all this happened up to scratch? Mm. And as we know, working in a mine in Latin America is a pretty dangerous occupation at any time. Mm. And I think it's a reminder, isn't it, that these people, they were nearly a mile underground or whatever, digging this stuff up.
Well, 2 years before the disaster, I was looking this up, and there was an article in the Times that explained that 2 years before the disaster, the mine was actually closed due to safety reasons.
Correct. Exactly. So now, of course, everybody's what the government in Chile is trying to do, along with the mine owners, is to ride this wave of goodwill and avoid the nasty questions. Well, how did this happen in the first flipping place? You know.
So I imagine the mine will be being closed now, won't it?
Definitely.
Also, we had, about this time last week, we had this disastrous US rescue mission, in inverted commas, to save the British aid worker Linda Norgrove in Afghanistan, which ended up as a total disaster. Now, we were first of all told that she had been killed by some sort of suicide vest, which had been strapped to her in some kind of evil manner by the captors. Mm. And then we hear that actually it doesn't look like that was the case at all, that it was the US Army, as they were going in to rescue her, that actually killed her with one of their own grenades. Now, Martin, this is really tragic, isn't it?
Well, of course it is. It's very tragic. But what's significant is two things about this. One is that Afghan elders were in the area, literally a mile away, waiting to try and negotiate a release. I understand from what I've been reading that people are captured all the time, and most of them are released after the payment of ransoms, although the British government didn't want to pay a ransom. And the other thing, of course, is it looks as if the immediate response of the NATO forces was to make up a story that she'd been killed by a suicide vest. Mm. And then, of course, 24 hours later, it all comes out opposite. And this has happened a lot in Afghanistan, where the immediate response of the NATO forces has been to say, oh, no, nothing really happened here. No, nobody really died. And then other people look into it and find that they're actually making it up.
But we had a similar thing, didn't we, the other week, when we were told immediately by NATO that there was a helicopter attack across the Pakistani border. We were told immediately by NATO that, oh, no, our helicopters didn't cross there. And then about a few hours later, they admitted rather shamefacedly that, oh, yes, the helicopters had sort of gone off course.
What that implies is that their first instinct is to lie. And that, of course, is undermining confidence in everything that they say.
But with the wider picture, Shirley, what are your thoughts about the whole sort of business of Afghanistan, without not necessarily specifically this incident? Are you supporting the British intervention in Afghanistan?
In what respect?
Well, do you think we should be over there?
No.
And so what would you like to see?
I'd like to see all our men home. And it'd be really nice if it was happened before Christmas.
Well, one of the reasons that we're told that we're out there, though, is to prevent possible terrorist training camps and things like that. Mm. Do you agree with that mission?
Personally, on a personal level, no, I don't agree. I believe that it's time for our men to come out of Afghanistan.
So do you think that possibly British troops in Afghanistan could be making things worse?
Well, I've been told that they're actually making things better, and there's been a great deal of work that they have done since they've been there, and they've prevented a lot from happening. But in saying all that, all the good that they have done, it was been tremendous, and many of our men have died, and they are now they are heroes. But it would have we could have avoided it in the first place. So I think the whole thing could have been avoided. But now that they are there, it would be nice that there was a gradual retreat to come back home.
Can I just come in on that? Because actually I agree with that completely. But your party leadership and my party leadership are still stuck in a rut on this, even though the masses of the British people agree with us and not with them. I mean, they had a vote on this in the House of Commons not long ago. Only the minority parties and some Labour people voted against. Virtually all the mainstream politicians were like a herd of sheep. But as you know, the opinion polls agree with what you've just been saying and what I agree with. Yeah. But I mean, that will have to change in due course, I'm sure.
But I feel, for us on a whole, we really need to praise our men for the hard work that they've actually done. They've been tremendous, and I've been reading so much about that, followed a lot. And I think that we really need to commend them, because they've worked very hard, and the amount of money that has been supporting them, it's been very little. The resources that is there is very little what they're actually working with, and they're still doing a tremendous job. So we need to give them, in this country, I feel that we need to give our men a tremendous amount of respect. They deserve that respect and honour.
Well, one of the main political forces in Britain ensuring that British troops stay in Afghanistan is David Cameron. And Friday Drive Times' Marina Morris has been out and about on the streets of Bristol this week to ask you how you think Prime Minister David Cameron is getting on.
Is Mr. Cameron the right person to lead the country?
Yes. I think he has the appearance, in terms of appearance, he has the appearance of a diplomat and a prime minister. And also, I think in terms of his party, the Conservatives are probably the best party to help sort out the mess we're in terms of getting things done and cutting budgets. I think they're the best of the parties for that. They're going to make decisions.
I don't think so, no, partly because I don't like the Conservatives. I didn't vote for them. So the fact that he didn't win an overall majority makes me think that he shouldn't be the Prime Minister. But, you know, the fact that they got a majority means it's fair enough he is in.
He's a politician, I don't trust any of them, really.
Probably, because we need a change of leader from Labour, and he seems like a decent bloke.
I was backing Gordon Brown, thinking an economics man would help get us out of the recession. I think he seemed to be leading the way in Europe. People were going to him for advice, so I thought he was in the strongest position, so I backed Labour. So I know the Tory policies as generally, but in terms of coalition, I don't really know, you know, what he was standing for, whether he'd fulfill his promises or not.
Give him a chance, really. It's first
he's
time.
He's got a lot to pick up from the last government as well, I think, hasn't he?
I don't know if there's really anyone better for it at the moment. I think it's pretty much we're just putting up with the best we have. I just pretty much don't trust any politician. I think they promise too much.
I don't think he's doing a bad job of it now.
No, he's not doing a bad job, but could be better.
Could be better, yeah.
But I don't think it really matters who's doing it. It's just the government in general. It doesn't matter who's leading.
Is George Osborne the right hand of the government?
I think he's doing an okay job, so I have no reason to believe that he's not, as David Cameron has appointed him. Then I think he's cutting waste. I think the public sector was far too big, and you know, everyone else, you know, the private sector has had to cut back, so I think it's only fair that the public sector has to take some share of the pain as well.
I think he's cutting money in the wrong places. My boyfriend works as a civil servant, and I know that it's going to affect all of his offices and the way they do things, and something that they've been trying to build for years, and suddenly that's going to be cut back on. And they don't seem to be learning from old mistakes, they seem to be sort of just recreating them. So no, I think the civil service will be hard hit when they could be, you know, spending cuts in other places, definitely.
I think he's more of a puppet as opposed to an independent thinker. And the Chancellor is the second most important person in the government, and they should be a bit more independent as opposed to just a doer all the time. There is ways to be cut, but I think you'll probably end up cutting too many arms and legs off it, and eventually it won't die, but it won't be as efficient as possible.
I work in the private sector, so I don't know the full extent of it. I sell into government accounts, and I've not seen the cuts, but I know they're imminent, so I think it's probably a little bit too early in the day to say.
You don't know, you just got to give them a chance, innit, and see what happens.
That was you out on the streets of Bristol giving Marina Morris your views about the success or otherwise of our current Prime Minister, David Cameron. Now, Shirley Brown is joining me, Liberal Democrat councillor. Shirley, how happy are you with Mr Cameron, and what do you think? How do you think he's doing as a Prime Minister so far, as your party is in coalition with him? Now, you're shaking your head.
You definitely put me on the spot this time, haven't you? This is a setter. Isn't it just?
Now, I mean, I understand, obviously, that in Bristol, the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats are not in coalition.
Without a shadow of a doubt, I can definitely say that.
But anyway, what are your thoughts about Mr Cameron and about the way that the Liberal Party is getting on with him?
Right. My thoughts on David Cameron is that a decision has been made by the people. Everyone voted with their legs in May. We have to accept whatever decisions that they have made, and we need to move forward. If they feel that this is the right way forward for us to go, we may not like it, but we have to accept it, because this is a decision us as a people have made. And therefore, in respect to them and them trying to make the UK, everything, Britain right, and to go back on track, then I think it's for us to digest it slowly and accept it, and we need to move on. I think we have no choice. I think we have no choice. Yes, it does hurt, and I think it hurts in all angles, and everyone is feeling the pinch. But if it's going to take this to happen in order for us to go on the up next year and in the years to come, and it's going to be better for our children and their children, and it's going to be better for our country on the whole, then I think that we all have to say, okay, yes, let's go forward. But I do also believe that David Cameron has to be in a position to listen. And if people on a whole is unhappy about particular issues, then he must be prepared to change.
Do you think he's listening enough to the Liberal Party as part of this coalition? Because, I mean, at least two important decisions, like the cancelling of Trident, and now we've heard this week on tuition fees. Mm. Really, you know, the Liberal Party is having some of its major policies, which it got elected on, simply trashed by Mr Cameron.
Mm. Yeah, I feel that this is a disappointment. One cannot be ignorant about that. It's very disappointing. And the tuition fees, that is very disappointing, because I've always been one for education and for our young people. And we need to make life better for our young people, not make it harder. So on a whole, personally, on a personal view, I feel that I'm very upset about this. I'm very annoyed about it. And I could go on a soapbox and really go on about this. But I feel, but I do feel that, you know, I do feel something needs to be done. I do feel that this particular one, this particular policy needs to be looked at again. We need to look at this again.
Well, Lord Brown has already had a very, very good look at it, the ex-boss of BP. Mm. But, I mean, there are questions about him, aren't there? Because he resigned from BP in disgrace, and now he's been sort of rehabilitated and picked up by the Cameron government. Mm-hmm. And he's come out with this report, which is going to mean that, it, at least what most of the analysts say, is that it's going to be much more difficult for poorer families to send their children to university.
It's going to be very hard, because my son is wanting to go to university, and many others within the inner city wants to go to university, and I feel that it'll be very hard and very difficult. So I, for one, I'm actually saying that I feel that this needs to be rethought about. We need to rethink this. This needs to be rethought. And I feel that if the whole country come together and say, no way, do you really think that it can happen? Do you?
I disagree with the policy as well, Shirley.
This is the tuition fees we're talking about. Yeah, yeah.
What I look for from the Conservative government at the moment,
it's a coalition, not just a Conservative government.
Well, the coalition as opposed to the Labour Party. The Labour Party didn't do the right things when they were in power either. But the problem we've now got is that everybody's convinced that we need to cut. In actual fact, I don't think we do need to cut. That's not what we should be doing at all. Now, what I want to see is the Conservative-Liberal coalition revert to the kind of policies that Conservative governments used to pursue in the 1950s, which were very much more status.
But we're not in the 1950s,
no,
Martin.
The point I'm trying to make here is that I'm not trying to make cheap political points on behalf of the Labour Party about these things. What I'm trying to say is I want to see a change of policy, whoever is the Prime Minister, and I think that David Cameron needs to be big enough to understand, and I think what will happen next year, instead of coming out of recession, we're going to go down the hole. And at that point, you have to increase government expenditure. So in other words, a lot of this is a merry-go-round where we pretend to cut, we then start panicking and freak out, and then we start increasing public expenditure again. This is what happened when Margaret Thatcher was in power.
But you're talking about increasing borrowing when everyone else is saying
I'm not talking about increasing
it.
Borrowing, because we can't carry on. What we've got to do is A, reform the financial system, as we talked about earlier, and have the guts to do it, and B, the wealthy classes who've done so well out of the last 30 years in this country under Thatcherism and New Labourism, they have done very well. They've doubled, trebled, quadrupled their income. It's time for them to get their checkbooks out because it's a national emergency. Instead of cutting, I'm all right, Jack, pull up the ladder. We're not really interested in helping the inner cities. It's time for everybody to take a good look at who gets what in our society and what the fairness is.
I partially agree. I feel that it is very important that we need to reconsider this particular policy, because this is something that we've stood for a very long time. So this is an issue that needs to be looked at, and I do believe that our local MP, Stephen, is actually going to be pushing this and talking about this a lot, because it's something that we've all fought for a very long time. So I do believe that this particular policy needs to be reviewed again.
So
we need to review it again.
But do you think your leader, Nick Clegg, is really able to twist David Cameron's arm enough to actually get a rethink on it?
I believe that if a people come together and is singing from the same hymn sheet, he has no choice but to listen. And I feel if everyone, all the students in our communities, in the city, everywhere, actually come together and say, no, we're not going to accept this, I believe he has to listen. He has no choice but to listen.
I understand that many Liberal MPs will be voting against the policy.
Yes, I believe.
Although those who are in the government are whipped, you know, because they're under the government whip, so they'll have to go along with it. But I think this is we're going to see a lot more of this as we go forward. And the fact that we've got a coalition means that in fact there's possibly more scope to put pressure on the government than there would be if it was one party alone who was in power. We need to have a new style of politics and try and get everybody on board and all the rest of it. But I can't get on board with this bandwagon because it's going in the wrong direction. We shouldn't be cutting public expenditure at all. And of course, the Labour Party in the past was unwilling to say that. So when we had Kerry on last week, she and I were both a bit
This is Labour MP Kerry McCarthy.
Alan Johnston being appointed as Ed Miliband's economics, you know, shadow chancellor, because he is going to stick to basically the Darling Brown position, is that we are going to cut, but not now.
But I think our children are our future, aren't they not? The children are for our future. The young people are our future. We're not going to be at this age all the time. We're going down. They're going up.
But isn't this a sort of privatisation almost of the university system? It's almost like if you can afford to go, then you can go. But if you have got the academic qualifications, you're going to be saddled with a massive debt, possibly for the rest of your life.
It's wrong. It's totally wrong. I don't want to elaborate too much.
Can I just sort of change tack a little bit, Shirley, because I wonder what your feelings are about how the Liberal vote in Bristol is likely to be affected by things like this, where there's a bit of a difference in policy, in fact in this case a total difference in policy between the Lib Dems and what's actually happening on the ground up in Westminster.
I feel that we are actually doing very well as the Lib Dem administration here in Bristol. We've done some major changes. It's been very positive. As Barbara would say, we're onwards and upwards. We're doing very well. I cannot say for anywhere else, but I feel in Bristol we've done exceptionally well.
Okay, now...
And everything, can I just say that everything that we as a party have said here in Bristol, we've actually achieved that and we've actually accomplished that. So we've done very well.
Now, Drive Time's Clive Somerville is here to remind us of some previous coverage that Shirley has had in the Bristol Evening Post.
Oh.
Come on, Clive.
Good evening. Yes, well, I think it's fair to say that Lib Dem councillor Shirley Brown is no stranger to controversy. In March 2009, Bristol's only black councillor was accused of missing too many council meetings while spending time abroad with her American husband.
Not true.
One journalist even dubbed her Shirley Brown, Lib Dem councillor for Florida.
Okay, not true.
Conservative councillors tabled a motion to have the £11,000 annual allowance that councillors received docked if they missed too many meetings. Tory leader Richard Eddy put the case by saying, "People feel aggrieved when they hear of certain councillors being paid to represent their constituents when they are not in a position to carry out this important role. Such a situation brings the council into disrepute and must not be allowed to continue." But Lib Dem council leader Barbara Jenk responded by saying, "This is a very selective approach. It does not deal with members whose words or deeds bring the council into disrepute, which is much worse than being absent. The motion was not carried."
Okay, so Shirley, can you put the record straight on this then?
Yes, the first
you, you spent a little
first?
Bit of, quite a lot of time, it's really just the one point, which is that you spent a lot of time in the United
not
States
true.
And missed a lot of council meetings.
Not, the reason why, shall I be absolutely honest, why, which was kept secret, is that I actually had a mini stroke. And that was the reason why I wasn't attending the meetings. And it was decided by Barbara and Whip that I take time out. I was not in America. Yes, I went to America for 2 weeks. And as everyone will know, if you you stay over 3 months or you have to have a green card to live in America, and I can't afford to stay more than 2 weeks or 3 weeks the max, and I have a young son who actually goes to college here, a teenage son. So there is no way that I could be living in America. So I was ill, and there was a period that I had to recuperate. And as everyone know, I took time out. And I think that, you know, I have been quiet for a very, very long time, amidst the false accusations that has been made against me and in the media. But I felt for my own sanity, God has been with me, and for my own well-being, I thought it was best not to say anything. But I need to say that I've never actually lived in America.
So how did you react when you saw these reports in the newspaper and in the Bristol Evening Post and things like that, Shirley? Because it must have been a bit awkward.
I think it needs to be said, the Bristol Evening Post. I think from day one, since 2003, very naive to politics and local government, I've been attacked by the Bristol Evening Post from day one. I was very naive then. So it's nothing strange that they are sending out. I believe it's been a political game and using me as that person, and have been used in the political arena in a very bad way, which I'm very sad about, because I've done some very positive work. I've worked very hard in the community. I've campaigned for Knives Not Lives. I've worked within the school. I've been a governor of the schools. I mentor young people. I do a lot within the community. I've established community groups. I've established women groups. I've worked a lot with women who've been abused. I've done so much within the community. And everything that I've actually said that I would do before I became a councillor, I've actually accomplished that. John and I have worked exceptionally hard. And yes, there has been a period where Shirley had to rest, because I was actually working more than 70 hours per week. And I actually sacrificed my children. I actually sacrificed my family. I actually sacrificed even my marriage to do absolutely everything. And that's why I collapsed. And I think you can remember the report when I actually collapsed at work and I was rushed to hospital, and I was rushed with a suspected stroke. Now, that is no secret anymore, because I've tried to keep that a secret, because I feel there's some things you just shouldn't be put in the public domain. But unfortunately, it has been in the public domain. So I have recovered. And I am back. But the thing is, it's almost as though getting married, when I did in 2007, I got married in 2000. My dad had passed away that same year. I went away to rest. And actually, you know, when the last parent, because both my parents have passed away now, and I collapsed, and it was a suspected stroke. This is somebody that I've known for more than 5 years, who had been asking me to propose to them over and over again. And I went to Florida to rest. And then I thought, well, listen, why not? Why not? So it wasn't planned. My children didn't even know that I was going to get married. I had to telephone them and say, do you mind if I get married? I had to telephone everyone and say, do you mind if I get married? Because it wasn't a planned thing. It was just, I went over there, I was in love, and I thought, yes. And then within 2 days of me getting married, I was back here in this country working, within 2 days. And then I went over for Christmas, and I spent Christmas and the new year, and I came back the latter part of January. So I actually spent about 4 weeks with him, and this is where the story has come from. So that story has come from me spending just over 4 weeks with the man that I loved. And now I haven't seen him for nearly a year, and people are still saying that I'm living. I haven't seen him for more nearly a year, and I'm sure everybody out there would agree that if you're in love and with someone, it would be nice to be with them. But because of all the pressure that I've been under, you know, I haven't gone anywhere, and with all this that's been going on, so it hasn't been a very good. It hasn't been a nice journey for me on a personal level, to be perfectly honest.
But that's another. But it's another thing entirely, Shirley, isn't it?
Yeah.
To say that the Evening Post is playing political games with you.
Mm-hmm.
Surely they're just reporting what they know.
That's not what they know. It's not truth. How can they report what they know? That saying that I live in America is totally incorrect, and to actually telephone the embassy quite recently to find out. Where do I stand with that? I think they're trying to make sure that I don't go to America. They've done everything in their powers to make life. They've tried to make life hell,
so why,
and to say a lot of humor.
Why do you think that is?
Well, you need to ask them. I think that question needs to be asked. Why is it they have constantly? Why is it that the Evening Post have always felt it necessary to put me on the front page? I've always been, I think I'm the only councillor in Bristol that has always been on the front page of the Evening Post. Why? That's a good question.
Well, it certainly is. Okay, would you want to have your next report from the evening, from the slightly tainted Evening Post, the somewhat tainted Evening Post, about some of Shirley's controversial activities?
Yes, well, Shirley was also in the headlines, ironically perhaps for a meeting she did attend, when she accused Tory councillor Jay Jethwa, who is Asian, of being a coconut, an insult intended to imply that a person of colour is betraying their interests of their ethnic group by supporting the interests of white people, in other words, being brown on the outside and white on the inside. Councillor Jethwa had voted in favour of a Tory motion to cut funding from the Legacy Commission, which supports ethnic minority groups as part of the celebrations marking the 200th anniversary of the end of the slave trade. Councillor Brown retorted, "In our culture, we have a word for you, a word which many in our city would understand, and that's coconut. At the end of the day, I look at you as that." Despite an apology, Shirley was suspended from the council in July for 4 weeks by the Standards Committee, but this was overturned on appeal. An internal council investigation found that although the language used was, quote, deeply offensive, it was not considered racist. Councillor Brown was not so fortunate in court, however, where she was convicted of racially aggravated harassment and given a 12-month conditional discharge and a criminal record. She is currently appealing the judgment and, because the sentence is less than 3 months, is entitled to continue in her post as councillor.
Now, Shirley, I realise this is an active case here, so
yeah.
We've got to be very careful about how we talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you could explain something about the Legacy Commission, which was the origins of this comment. I mean, what can you just, because many people haven't even heard of the Legacy Commission. Can you explain
right.
what that is?
The Legacy Commission came from the Abolition 200, and it was felt within the community to have a fund, funding department by which anyone within the community could actually go tap into the resources in order to help better BME communities. Anyone from the BME communities can actually...
That's black minority ethnic.
Black minority ethnic, yes. There's a lot of work that the schools, it's been used by the education department, that the schools actually use the funding. There's a lot of positive things that has happened within the community. There's a lot of mentoring schemes. There's been a lot of programs that has developed through the Legacy Commission. There's a lot of support to young people who are underachieving. There's been so much that has happened, and there's so much good work that the Legacy Commission is in. But it was as a legacy, something that goes on from abolition to the work has been tremendous. They've done a tremendous work. So everyone could see the background from where it was going. So it's not only helping African Caribbean, it's helping BME, Black Minority Ethnic everyone within the community. And any other organisations who are not from within the BME can also access funding through the Legacy Commission. And they actually, they're the funding decision makers. They make decisions on who can, applications is sent to the Legacy Commission, and they actually decide on who should have money to better their projects and to help young people. It is aimed at helping a lot. One of their aims and objective is actually to help young people and to better the lives of young people, and especially young people who are actually underachieving in our schools.
Now, I understand that your appeal is pending, and you were due to actually have a hearing today, which has again been put off. Now, does you think this actually affects your ability to do the case when you're expecting to have a hearing and then you're suddenly told, no, it's not going to be today, it's going to be another several weeks' time?
Tony, the whole this whole process has been, what's the word for it? Absolutely terrible. The whole thing. I've never had a criminal record. I've lived a life to be a mentor, to be an example, to make a difference in my community. I've worked tirelessly, endlessly with young people, with people from different ethnic groups, different communities. I have worked very, very hard. And being the only African Caribbean counsellor as well, there's a lot of people within the community do look up to me as a mentor. Young people are actually looking to me. I actually go into schools. I do motivational seminars. I do seminars. I do so much. So, you know, to actually, for this to be happening, it has been very, very stressful, very painful. Words cannot begin to describe how I've felt for the last nearly 18 months. But I thank God that He has kept me and helped me, because as you know, that I'm a Christian. So my beliefs and what I believe and who I believe in has actually kept me strong. And also, I must add that my group has been, Barbara has been absolutely tremendous. She has supported
me. This is Council Leader Barbara Jank.
Barbara Jank. She's been tremendous. The group has been tremendous in the support that they have given me. And I just thank God for them, really, because I don't think I could have really made it. And with the, people within the community who might be even listening, there's so many people within the churches who have been praying for me, who's been helping me, who's been supporting me. And just having an elder, I'm walking on the road and an elder comes and hugs me and said, everything is going to be all right, has also helped me.
Now, it's also Black History Month right now,
yes,
isn't it?
It is.
And I think you wanted to say something about that, Shirley, didn't you?
Yes. Black History Month, as everyone is aware, October is Black History Month, and there's a lot that's actually going on in the schools. I know if you go on the council website, there's different things that's actually taking place. There's if you go into the foyer of the council, there's all these different pictures of different people who has actually made major, major difference in our community, in our country, and who has made a difference. Black people has actually made a difference. And I believe they actually got a project going on at the library as well, that you can actually go and find out some more information, and people can actually go to their libraries and find out more information. But what I'm actually doing, I'm working with a group of other people for Black History Month. I'm running a competition which I've to send out to all Bristol secondary schools, asking young people to prepare and present a speech using the question, who am I? Because I feel it's good when young people know who they are and what they're about. And it will ask the young people to give a brief history of their origins, their personal interests, their aspiration for the future, and how they believe local government can make a difference in bridging the gap in the city. So I'm in the process of spearheading this, and this letter has gone out to all the secondary schools, to all the heads in the city. And the reward, we're hoping, I must say to everyone, that I'm looking for sponsors. If you are from organizations, or if you have a little pot of money there somewhere that you'd like to help a young person, do get in contact with me. But the idea is that we're going to have a eat where we're going to have a final, and the winners from this, we're hoping, I've sent a letter to Barack Obama in America and President Obama to see if it's possible we can have an interview with him, to actually go and visit and have an interview with him where our young people can actually talk to him, have an interview, and actually bring back to their schools and to visit some places, because we're hoping to go next year, February, the USA Black History Month. So within their Black History Month, because it's really a big thing over there. And so we're hoping to go over there then. Failing that, and we do not get all the sponsorship and the money that is, because it's 995 for each person that we're going to, for each young person and for each person that's actually going to be travelling. But failing that, so everybody please don't say with all this that's going, all these cuts that's going on, what's happening, failing that, then we're actually going to be going to, I'm going to take them to local government and take them around to hopefully to see the Lord Mayor and to meet the various councillors, take them around the council house and all the things that's going on in Bristol.
Okay, thanks, Shirley. Now, another news story from this week. Residents' anger over threat to the Greenbelt. And there's only 2 weeks to go from now if anybody that wants to respond to the council's consultation over green spaces. But we've seen several stories in the Bristol Evening Post this week with groups of local residents from around the city who are most annoyed that their green spaces are being apparently earmarked to be sold off to housing developers by the Liberal Democrat ruling cabinet on the city council, of course, which you are in the same party, Shirley. So what are your thoughts about this plan to sell off our green spaces to raise a bit of money?
Do you feel that it takes, sometimes we have to do whatever it takes in order to move forward?
Martin, what about you, your thoughts then?
Well, I mean, we debated this very, very extensively, did we not?
And we're having some local people coming in next week on the second half of the show.
I mean,
the main
point I would make is, as a point I made when we were debating it with the residents and with the councillors, was that most people can't understand why, when we've got derelict land in the city, which nobody seems to be able to do anything about because the owners don't want to do anything with it and the council doesn't have the power to make them do anything with it, why are we building on green space? And that, of course, is because planning law is absolutely in favour of the property owner and the developer, and it's always been that way. It's one of the things wrong with Britain that needs to be changed.
So why are all these private landowners who own derelict industrial estates, why are they just sitting on them? And why are so many of these industrial units, I mean, as we've seen up near Victory Park, for example, up in Brislington, just left derelict for years on end? And yet, when it comes to building houses, we have to, apparently, use a bit of green space to build them. It just sounds bonkers.
Well, it is bonkers, isn't it? But, I mean, that's the way the system works. It's one of those things that, Labour was in power for 13 years. Did they change that system? No, they didn't. But it's been there for a very, very long time. Everything in this country favours the property owner. It's because of the history of the country. It was a country which was run by property owners until people who didn't have any property fought for the right to have a vote. And it was only extended to those with no property step by step. Women only got the vote in this country in 1920. And, they got the vote in New Zealand in 1880.
But Shirley, isn't what your group's doing here a kind of selling off the family silver? Because some of this land, for example, was donated. I know Victory Park in Brislington was donated just after the First World War to the people of Brislington for the sacrifices that they made during the war. And now it seems that the council is saying, well, let's just forget about that, the fact that it was donated to the people, and we're going to just sell it off to developers.
I don't believe that the council will make a decision without consultation. And I believe that a consultation is in process. And once that consultation is ended, then a decision will be made. So I don't believe that anything will be done as moving forward until that consultation is completed.
But some of the people have said that even though they live next door to bits of parkland and open space that the council are considering selling off, that they haven't actually been told directly. They've only heard it through neighbours and read things in the paper about it.
No, I believe no. There are ways that the council do access there. It's on the website, local website. I know information goes out by leaflets to people. It's actually, I'm sure it's actually on a poster, and what's intended that people can actually read. So you can access the information. It is ready available.
So what would you say to anyone that's worried that maybe a bit of open space near them may be up for sale?
They need to contact the local council and find out what's going on.
And they got 2 weeks time. In order to send their submission in.
You need to send your submission in. I think people don't realise until the last minute the process, and you need to go through the process. There is a process that we have to go by, and so everyone needs. It's usually right at the last minute. Then someone finds out about something, and then they start saying, "Well, we didn't know about it," but the information is there. And it's for them to use their right and to go through the process, and by going through the consultation and by contacting the council, contacting the various departments and making their voice heard. And I'm sure that the council is not going to be sort of blindfolded and not listening what the people of Bristol, because the Lib Dems have always been about listening. We have always listened. We have always listened to what the people want. We've always consulted, and we've always, if we've thought that we're making a mistake, then we've shifted and we've changed. And I think that is a good credit. That is a very good credit for the Lib Dems in Bristol. We have always been the listening party in Bristol. So I feel that that is very important, that everyone, if you feel this, that this is going to be happening and is likely to happen in your area, then you need to contact the local department, you need to contact the council, and you need to make your voice heard. If you do not make your voice heard, then nothing can be done. But once, and contact the executive member, if you feel that it's necessary, contact your executive member, speak to them, and I'm sure that they will listen, because they need to know as well how the general public is actually feeling. And it's imperative. Sometimes a lot of people blame the council, you did this, you did that, ready to point, but there's sometimes we've all got to work together in order to make a difference. Everyone within the community and us as councillors, we are all making a difference, and we have to listen to what you want, the people want, in order to make effective change. And to make effective change, the only way that we can do that is by you making your voices heard, and we will change. So I don't feel that we're very stubborn as a party, that we're not prepared to listen.
So what happens when the message comes back from the people listening now to say, actually, we don't want any of these green spaces sold off?
Well, then it's for the party to come together and decide what they're going to do in order to help the people move forward.
Okay, our next story is looking at down at some activities and what's happening over in Lebanon, because President Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, has been visiting Lebanon, and we hear from the far-right MK party in Israel that assassinating Ahmadinejad today is like assassinating Hitler in 1939. ERF Edad of the National Union, that is one of the Israeli political parties, says that Israel should seize the opportunity to kill Ahmadinejad whilst he's visiting Lebanon. The far-right MK, that's the member of the Knesset, called on Wednesday for the assassination of Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad to make his current visit to Lebanon as the opportunity to do so. Martin.
Well, it's a provocative sort of things to say. I mean, the Lebanese might say we should assassinate your elected politicians and see how you like that. That would be regarded as absolutely unacceptable. If anybody said that you're a right-wing politician in Israel, I don't like what you're saying, I'm going to call for you to be assassinated. That's effectively what he's doing.
But this is only words, isn't it?
Well, words, Shirley will tell you that the words can often get you into trouble. and words can lead to, and that's why there are limits on freedom of speech. Not just here, but everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not allowed to swear on this programme, and I'm not allowed to insult other guests. And that's the rules. And this guy is showing Israel's true face, sadly.
But he's a minority party in Israel.
They're a minority party, but of course he's appealing to the gallery there. Ahmadinejad, like him or loathe him, is the leader of Iran. And he's the elected leader of Iran as well. I know there's all this fuss about whether he did or did not win the election in Iran, but many independent observers, independent, thought that he did win. He certainly won a lot better than our puppet, Hamid Karzai, in Afghanistan, who stuffed the ballot boxes completely shamelessly under the noses of our brave boys. So the wider picture is this is the real potential for another war between Israel and Lebanon. And this, of course, is part of the rhetoric leading up to that. And we don't want a war. Sensible people don't want a war, of course not.
Shirley, have you got any thoughts on what this Israeli politician has been saying in the Knesset in Israel about the Iranian president?
I personally would rather not comment, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, why should people comment about things that they don't...
Martin, what's the implication of calling for assassinations of foreign leaders that you disagree with and you don't like?
Well... those who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones, because then of course you're opening the door to people. I mean, this was the argument against the Americans torturing their prisoners, because if you're an American falling into the hands of the enemy, then of course you haven't really got a leg to stand on if they start torturing your prisoners. I mean, we've got to actually rise above this. Incidentally, can I commend Barbara Yank and the Liberal leader of the Liberal Party in Bristol for their support for the Gaza Link There's been superb cross-party support for that.
Yes.
Even Richard Eddy sent his support to the Gaza convoy.
Mm-hmm.
And he, of course, now is suffering his own medical problems, and let's wish him well, despite everything that's happened.
Yeah, of course.
Well, it's a very different spirit to that spirit we were hearing in the Knesset earlier this week. Finally, Hitler exhibition is to break the taboos in Berlin, and apparently Hitler is now being exhibited and loads of Nazi memorabilia in a German prison. At the same time, Russia Today tell us that 10% of Germans want the Führer back in a survey.
Wow.
Martin, do you want to start on this one quickly? We've only got a minute or so.
Well, I don't want him back. I'm against it.
Okay. But what about the idea of having a Hitler exhibition in Berlin? Because this is the first time, apparently, that this has ever happened.
People have got to honestly confront their history, whether it's the history of slavery or the history of fascism. That's true. Young people need to be exposed to these things.
I agree.
Have you any more say on that, Shirley?
On this particular subject?
Yep.
No.
Okay. Well, that just conked us out half a minute. That was only half a minute. I was wanting you to chat for a little bit longer than that.
No, I think it's important at the end of the day. We have to respect people and we have to respect their culture and their background, full stop. As our colleague just said, you have to respect a history. But I really would rather not go into details.
What they've said is, in this article in Agence France Presse, is that the demon of Nazism has been dead for a long, long time, and now it's okay to have these exhibitions.
Well, I don't think it is. I mean, look around the world and we can see various fascist tendencies appearing as a result of the economic crisis.
Okay, well, that's it for this hour. We'll be back afterwards talking about bloggers and blogging. Thanks very much to Shirley Brown.
Thank you very much.
Liberal Democrat councillor for Ashley and St Paul's.
BCFM is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody